Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Opel. The all-new Opel Mokka. With a new visor front face and pure panel interior, this is Opel.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
And now we're going to talk about sleep. Have you been getting less sleep since the start of the pandemic? Well, you're not alone, because pandemic-related sleep issues have surged, and coronasomnia, as it's been labelled, is interfering with sleep patterns globally. Research from the University of Southampton found lockdowns led to a rise in people suffering with sleeping problems, from 1 in 6 to 1 in 4. And I'm joined now by Professor Andrew Coogan, who's behavioural neuroscientist and director of the Chronobiology and Sleep Research Laboratory at Maynooth University. You're very welcome, Andrew. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Claire.
How real is this coronasomnia I've just mentioned?
Yeah, so what we're really talking about there is insomnia. And insomnia is a chronic sleep disorder characterized by an inability to fall asleep, to stay asleep, or to be refreshed when you wake up. Now, nearly all of us will have experienced one or all of those symptoms at some point in our life. But insomnia is a problem when it's chronic, when it's ongoing. So one of the precipitating factors that we know is really important for insomnia disorders is anxiety, is depression symptoms, and stress. So, of course, if the pandemic and everything that goes with the pandemic is raising anxiety levels, stress levels, symptoms of depression, psychological stress, then we would expect that to be reflected in rising incidences of insomnia. And, of course, then insomnia feeds back. So if we're not getting enough sleep, that can feed our anxiety, that can feed our stress, that can feed our symptoms of depression.
Yes, and that brings the problem then for the next night. But on the other side of this, people may not be commuting as much, they may not be quite as tired, so there may be a reason why you're not sleeping as much, and there might be for good reason.
Well, so we did the study on this, and we showed that something that we term social jet lag is decreased. So social jet lag is basically the discrepancy between when our bodies would like us to sleep and when our social and work and school obligations force us to wake up and force our sleep schedules. So for most of us, normally, actually, when we should be sleeping is more reflected in the weekend or work-free days. That's actually when our body would prefer us to sleep. Now, most of us don't have the option of sleeping like that, and under normal circumstances, we, about 80% of us, use an alarm clock because our body is not yet ready to wake up on the mornings that we've got to go to work.
What's your take on naps, Andrew? Good or bad?
So naps, it's a mixed bag for naps. So naps can be really useful. The benefit you get from a nap is actually disproportionately large to the amount of time you spend in the nap. So 10 or 20 minutes nap can give you a real boost and relieve a lot of sleepiness. Where you probably might not want to be napping is if you are having problems falling asleep at night. So you probably want to have a situation where you're going to bed as sleepy as possible to maximize your chances of actually falling asleep. And a nap could relieve that and actually make you less sleepy at bedtime.
I have a question about shift work, which I'll come to in a moment. Yep. But the 20-minute nap, that's a really difficult one to do, because if you're tired enough to need a nap, you probably feel you need longer than 20 minutes, and it's very hard to rouse yourself after just 20
yep.
minutes.
So that can be a problem. It's something called sleep inertia. So that sort of woolly-headed feeling we get, you know, when we wake up, and it can take half an hour or an hour to shake off. So it really depends. The other thing about napping is, like, for older adults, napping is a sort of natural thing. Older adults will naturally nap longer, so I wouldn't want to put out a message that napping is bad and it should be avoided.
Yeah, it can suit some people. So let me bring you this question then, from someone who works in healthcare, working yeah. different days every week, yeah. mostly 13-hour shifts, yeah. night duty every 3 to 4 weeks. Every member of staff struggles with lack of sleep or disturbed sleep. Have you any ideas to help us?
Yeah, so sleep and shift work is a big problem. So basically in shift work, when it's a rotating shift work, so you're rotating from morning to evening to night shifts, your body clock can never catch up with that rotation of the shift. When you're on night shifts, you're trying to sleep then during the day when you come home off the night shift. And that's really difficult because, again, our bodies aren't designed. We're trying to make ourselves do something where our physiology is saying, you know, daytime is the time for us to be up and about and to be active. But because we're working the night shift, we're trying to sleep. There's no silver bullet to shift work and to sleep problems in shift work. There are some recommendations, you know, about diet and about, you know, trying to keep, if you are trying to sleep during the day, try to keep the bedroom as quiet and as dark as possible. But it's a really tricky question, and shift work, and a lot of people do shift work, about 20% of the working population actually undertake shift work. So it's a big problem out there, but unfortunately there's no silver bullet to it.
Okay, and how about binge watching? So this is a new way of watching TV over the last 10 years or so, where you're not just watching one episode of something, you're watching three or four sometimes, more on a bad night. How does that impact sleep, do we know?
Yeah, so, well, we don't know precisely, but we do know a couple of things. So we know that the light that's emitted from devices, so your laptop, your telly, your phone, is actually particularly enriched at blue wavelength light at the short end of the visible spectrum. And we know that that's the type of light that our sleep system is particularly sensitive to, and the time it is particularly sensitive to it is in the evening to early night. So if we're staying up all night, you know, binge-watching 12 episodes of House of Cards or whatever, actually the light that's coming off the device that we're watching it on could actually be disturbing our sleep. So when we try to go to sleep afterwards, we find it much more difficult to do that.
Okay, and that touches on sleep hygiene then, and the phone in the bedroom as well, and using the phone as an alarm clock. I'm not looking at anybody myself. it's a bad idea. We know it's a bad idea. Slightly addictive, but do you recommend that we just don't have the phone where we're sleeping?
Yeah, absolutely. So sleep hygiene basically says that we should use our bedrooms for sleep and, if we're lucky, for sex and nothing else. So phones out of the bedroom, devices out of the bedroom as dark and as quiet as possible. Now, clearly, that's if you can. Not everyone is fortunate to be in that situation. And obviously, if we're working from home and we're using our bedrooms as offices and all that, that makes it more difficult. But if you can, keep your bedroom as clean and as simple as possible. Definitely phones and devices outside.
Yeah, but see, we've developed an anxiety now about the reliability of the old-fashioned alarm clock
yeah.
You know, where you'd be awake half the night worried that it's not going to go off. Aisling's husband twitches and jumps in his sleep, sometimes violently, but most times low-level movement, just enough to wake Aisling up. It doesn't seem to wake him up or disturb his sleep. Is there a name for this, or more importantly, a solution?
So what you probably have there is something called a parasomnia. So parasomnia is a sleep behaviour. So they can be sleep talking, sleep walking, even grinding your teeth, moving about in bed. They happen generally in the phase of sleep that we're not dreaming in. Some people have more sleep parasomnias than others. Generally, you are more prone to have a parasomnia if your sleep is more disturbed. So if you're having problems with sleeping and you're getting insufficient sleep, you're probably at more risk then, when you do get to sleep, of sleep talking, sleep walking, joshing around in the bed, doing these various things.
And what can you do about that?
Well, again, you can think about things like sleep hygiene and try to maximise the quality of you and your bed partner's sleep. But it may just be an individual style of the individual as well. So some people are just more prone to this. Some people are more restless. You know, they sleep well, but they're more...
They move around, and that just might be the way they are. Just,
exactly.
We have about 30 seconds left, but I really want to ask you about sleep trackers, Fitbits, Apple watches, because Mary says that her Fitbit says she's getting 4.5 hours of deep sleep out of 8. She's read the average is 1 to 2. Is it normal? But bigger than Mary's question, do you recommend those things?
No.
Great.
I have an activity tracker. I don't use it for sleep. Look, the way I'd express it is, well, what are you going to do about it? You can't just magically sleep more. And I would have big concerns about the accuracy of the data that comes off a lot of those things. Okay.
Andrew, we will talk to you again because so many questions have come in. Thank you so much for your time today, and we hope to come back to you at some point. That's Andrew Coogan. Let's take a quick break before the news.
Email todaycb@rte.ie.